Sometimes you hear a verse in maybe a sermon, or you read a verse as you're studying through the Bible that really just hits you right between the eyes. I mean, you look at that verse and you say, man, there is part of my problem, or there is something that strongly affects me. And so recently I heard a sermon preached by a young man I've known since he was a child, really, and he's really blossomed into a great young preacher, a man by the name of Jacob Rutledge. And he preached a sermon some time ago. It was posted on Facebook about the root of bitterness. And there were a couple of things he said as I listened to that sermon that really struck home with me. And so, of course, that gave me the idea that I need to preach on the same topic. Now, I developed my own sermon outline after listening. Really, I don't think I even listened to the entire sermon. But I got so excited about this topic, and it felt like it was something that was so important that I just kind of quit listening, and I started coming up with my own sermon. And so here we're going to talk about the same topic, the bitter roots. We read about in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 15 through 17. It says here, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness spring up, trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person, as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. For ye know how that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected. For he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. And so, in Hebrews chapter 12, he speaks of the root of bitterness. Now, the context of Hebrews 12, in verses 1 through 4, he talks about the Christian endurance race, that we're to run with patience the race that is set before us, that we're to lay aside the weight of doubt, the weight of sin. And so here in this context, it's just after chapter 11, of course, which we refer to as the Great Hall of Fame of Faith. And so as evidence, or as a reason to run the endurance race, to lay aside the doubt, he says, wherefore, seeing we are so compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, he says, let us lay away the weight, set it aside. Remember what men in the past have accomplished. He also talks in verses 2 and 3 about what Jesus went through to bring about our salvation. And he says, you have not yet even resisted unto blood. And so Jesus endured these things for our sake. And so the Christian race is an endurance race. Sometimes while we run that endurance race, there is chastening involved. And in verses 5 through 11, he speaks about the chastening of the Lord. He says that you have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you. As unto children, my son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. And so he talks about the chastening of the Lord. It's tough to endure, but it's worth going through because of the result, because of the fruit that comes from it. Notice verse 11, Hebrews 5:11. But no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. And so it's worth going through because it yields the peaceable fruits of righteousness. James, in James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, he said, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have a perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. And then verse 12 says, blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. And so the chastening of the Lord, it brings about the peaceable fruit of righteousness. In verses 12 through 14, he talks about what those peaceable fruits are. He says, in Hebrews 11, it says, wherefore lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, because the chastening yields this peaceful fruit. So don't be discouraged. He says, be encouraged. Lift up your hands, which hang down, the feeble knees. Make straight paths for your feet. And so walk uprightly. Lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. Follow peace with all men. And so again, follow peace and holiness. Follow peace with all men, without which no man will see the Lord. And he says to look diligently, so that you do not fail of the grace of God. And so that brings us to verses 15 through 17, the bitter roots. You know, what happens when we allow the weight of sin, we allow the weight of doubt and discouragement to bring us down? What happens when we do not accept the chastening of the Lord? What happens to us? Well, we lose sight of the grace of God. It says, lest any of you fail of the grace of God, and a root of bitterness grows in our hearts. And so when we don't, when we let everything pull us down, we lose sight of the grace of God and we become bitter. Now, what is bitterness? You know, the English word is a bitter taste, or rather a quality in things which excites a biting, disagreeable sensation of the tongue. You know, one of my favorite things in the world to drink is apple cider. Non-alcoholic, obviously, but just regular old apple cider. You know, it's very, very sweet. On the other hand, up in our cabinet, we have this bottle. Looks exactly like apple cider when you look at the bottle. Other than what's inside, it's apple cider vinegar. If you've ever had apple cider vinegar, it's very, very bitter. So imagine you see this kind of golden liquid that looks like cider sitting in a glass, and you think, oh boy, here's a nice big glass of apple cider. It's going to be so sweet and so refreshing. And you take a bite, and what happens? You pucker up. It's sour. It's not what you expect. And so who is a bitter person? And so that's bitter in the normal sense, but it's also used figuratively to speak about people. And so who is a bitter person? It's one who, in a figurative sense, exhibits extreme enmity, a grudge or hatred, or rather an excessive degree of implacableness of passions and emotions, as the bitterness of anger, sharpness, severity of temper. And so, you know, have you ever expected, you know, talk to someone maybe at a church service, or maybe a family member, that you think you're going to hear words of kindness and humility from them, only to have them bark at you or speak to you in a bitter and disagreeable way? You know, we don't like to be around people like that. Sometimes we meet them, and those are people we tend to want to avoid. You know, there's usually somebody in the congregation or somebody maybe in our family that has that kind of attitude. I'm always reminded, I don't know if the sign is still there. It's been years since I've been to Rush Springs, Oklahoma, but there used to be, on the way in from the south, a sign that said, you know, welcome to Rush Springs, Oklahoma, home to, I don't remember what the population was, you know, 2,356 happy people and a couple old sore heads. And there's always somebody like that, bitter person. And so it's like, again, it's like drinking that apple cider vinegar when you're expecting it to be something sweet like apple juice. And so bitterness. The Bible speaks of Esau as one in whom a root of bitterness has grown. Again, notice verse 15, or verse 15, it says, lest there be any root of bitterness springing up to trouble you, thereby many are defiled. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau. And so notice here, it speaks of Esau as one who is a bitter person, a profane person, a root of bitterness, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthrights. And so notice we are told that if we do not endure with patience the things that life throws at us, that we can lose sight of the grace of God. Esau, in like that he became defiled. He became stained. That's what the word defiled means. When we lose sight of the grace of God and become bitter towards our fellow men, we become defiled. You know, when a husband or wife becomes bitter toward their spouse, it's easier for them to be tempted toward fornication or adultery as a means of getting back. And notice here, he says he's an adulterer. The Bible connects these two concepts of bitterness and adultery. And so as a result of his bitterness, he became a profane person, one who is unholy. And so what resulted from Esau's bitterness? First of all, it was the loss of his birthright. He threw it away for a bowl of chili. We might say in Texas, a bowl of chili or a bowl of stew. He lost the blessings of his father also, and he was rejected later on. It was too late to receive the blessing, even though he sought it with tears. Notice verse 17. He regretted it, inherited the blessing which was rejected, for he found no place for repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. It was regrets. And so how does bitterness grow? And bitterness grows in a heart that is empty of grace. And I'm stealing that from Jacob Rutledge. And also, in that same context, Jacob said, if you want to see someone who is struggling with bitterness in their heart toward others, or who just have a bitter disposition, it's someone who progressively over time has lost the ability to appreciate the grace that God has given them. You know, because bitterness and resentment often occur when we've been mistreated by others. And think about the case of Esau, but also think about your own life. You know, bitterness begins with a small act, or our perception of a small act of mistreatment or some minor offense. You know, we don't start out automatically hating someone after they've done some minor thing. But bitterness and hatred grow when we start to view that person and all their interactions with us through the lens of that one thing. You know, bitterness is a root that grows from those seeds which are planted in the heart. Bitterness kind of sneaks up on us. We don't realize we're becoming bitter until suddenly maybe it's brought to our attention. And so besides Esau, who we'll get to in a moment, but before we get to Esau, I want to look at another bitter Bible character. You know, the bitter big brother of the prodigal son. You know, notice his reaction when he learns that his father is celebrating the return of the prodigal. We most likely are familiar with the parable of Jesus. The younger son takes his money, his inheritance, and he goes off and he wastes it. And then he comes to himself and he comes home and his father runs out to meet him and he throws this big celebration to mark his brother's return. Notice verse 25 of Luke 15, down to verse 28. Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, thy brother is come. Thy father hath killed the fatted calf because he hath received him safe and sound. And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore his father came out and entreated him. And so notice he is angry. Here his brother was lost, was dead to them, and now he has returned home. But he's angry and he's bitter. Why is that? Notice what he says to his father in verses 29 and 30. And he answering said to his father, lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandments. Yet thou gavest me a kid. Thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son, notice thy son, not my brother, thy son was come and which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. So he said, you've never thrown a party for me. I've always worked hard. I've always been here with you and working for you all this time. You've never done anything for me. But he forgot about the grace that comes from being in his father's house, from being the faithful one. Notice verses 31 and 32. The father says unto him, son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. He forgot the grace that he already had at being with his Father, at being faithful, knowing that he was going to receive everything that his Father had. He was going to receive that great blessing. And so are we like that bitter big brother of the prodigal son? Do we look at those in sin with envy because they're the ones having all the fun? Do we resent the ones who become prodigals in return? If so, maybe it is because we have lost sight ourselves of God's great in our own God's grace in our own lives. So let's go back then and look at the story of Esau. You know, we know about the birth of Jacob and Esau in Genesis chapter 25. We read beginning in verse 19 of Genesis 25. If I can find it in my Bible. Genesis 25, beginning in verse 19, we read, "And these are the generations of Isaac, Abram's son. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padanaram, the sister of Laban, and the Syrian. And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. And the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire the Lord. And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb. Two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. The one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. And when her days to deliver were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red all over, like a hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them. And the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter of the field, a man of the field, and Jacob a plain man dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob." And so notice here in this text we see that they struggled in the womb. Rebekah was told by the Lord that the elder shall serve the younger. In verse 23, Esau was born first, and the second child was born clutching the heel of Esau. And for this reason he was named Jacob, which means heel holder or supplanter. And then we notice their childhood. They are different personalities. Of course, there's nothing unusual about two brothers not having the same desires or having the same things that they're interested in. But I want to note especially the partiality. It says that that Isaac loved Esau and Rebekah loved Jacob. You know, Esau was beloved of the father, Rebekah loved Jacob. You want to plant a seed of bitterness in the heart of a child, and you treat your children like this with partiality. You know, they grew up in this environment where each was treated with partiality. You know, perhaps this caused strife with them early in their lives. You know, perhaps Esau felt slighted because of his mother's attitude towards his brother. You know, think about a small child especially. Who do they go to? Who do they most want to be with? Of course, it's their mother. You know, you can imagine that Isaac being the head of this large family, he is out and he is busy overseeing the flocks. He's busy overseeing his shepherds that work for him. He's got a busy agricultural operation or agricultural empire to run. And so he's probably not there all the time, and yet Rebekah is there taking care of both boys. Yet she has a particular affection towards Jacob that apparently she does not have toward Esau. So you think maybe Esau might have been bitter. You know, maybe she held the prophecy of the elder serving the younger over his head. But whatever bitter seeds were planted in his heart, they took root. And we see his bitterness expressed in verses 29 to 35. It says here, "And Jacob sod pottage. And Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, "Feed me, I pray thee, with the same red pottage, for I am faint." Therefore was his name called Edom. And Jacob said, "Sell me this day thy birthright." And Esau said, "Behold, I am at the point of die, and what profit shall this birthright do to me?" And Jacob said, "Swear to me this day." And he sware to him and sold his birthright unto Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and did eat and drink, and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthrights. And so we see his bitterness. He sells his birthright. He says, "What good does this birthright do me?" You know, his birthright was given him by God as the elder son. He should have received the blessing of his father. He should have received the lion's share of what was his father's. His birthright was given him by God. Through God's grace, he would have received it. But he lost sight of that grace. He lost sight of that which was going to be his. And therefore, he despised his birthright. And then later, a couple of chapters later, we read how he lost his blessing. In Genesis 27, and we know there that Jacob, his brother, tricked Isaac, their father, into blessing him. And when Esau came to receive his blessing, there was nothing left for him. Notice Genesis chapter 27 and verse 38, after Jacob has already come and stolen the blessing. Esau comes to his father, and his father says, "You know, I've already given the blessing to your brother." And in verse 38, Esau said unto his father, "Hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father." And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Now, why did this happen to Esau? Why did he lose his blessing? You know, because in his youth he had despised his birthright. When it was time to claim it, it was forfeit. Because he had not been satisfied with what God's grace was doing for him, he rejected the whole thing. And so he despised his birthright. And so remember that bitterness grows in a heart that is empty of grace. And so maybe we are bitter ourselves. Maybe this root of bitterness has grown within us. Or maybe there is another person that has a bitter attitude towards us. And so how do we overcome bitterness? How do we overcome bitterness in our life? Or how do we overcome the bitterness of others? Well, I think we can draw a good example from Jacob. He knew how his brother felt about him. There at the end of Genesis chapter 27, Esau says, "I'm going to kill him." And so remember what he does. He runs away. He flees from him, knowing that Esau is seeking his death. And they're gone for many years. He goes away, and he has wives and children in Haran, as well as Esau goes his way, and he marries and has children. And so it doesn't say exactly how many years it was. 8 to 10, maybe 15 years go by. We don't know for sure. But maybe this is what they needed. You know, they say that time heals all wounds. Maybe this was true with Jacob and Esau. Years passed, both brothers married, raised their families far away from each other. Then when it came time for Jacob to come home, when it was time for him to be reconciled to his brother, what did Jacob do? Well, I think we can see clearly that he killed him with kindness. You know, in Romans chapter 12, verses 20 and 21, we're told, "Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good." And so Jacob, he is, you know, long since repented of the sin that he has committed in stealing his brother's birthrights. He is in a right relationship with God, and now it's time to restore his relationship with his brother. And so when we read in Genesis chapter 32, verses 11 and 12, he begins by praying that he can be restored with his brother, or pray that he be delivered from his brother's anger. It says there, Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. And thou sayest, I will surely do thee good, and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So he prays for God's deliverance. And then he sends him many gifts, a graceful gesture of reconciliation. In verses 13 through 18. It says, and he lodged there that same night, and took of that which came to his hand a present for Esau his brother. And it goes on and lists a great number of animals that he took and he was going to give to his brother, sheep from his flock and donkeys and camels and many of his things that he had. In verse 17, he commanded the foremost, saying, when Esau my brother meeteth thee and asketh thee, saying, whose art thou? And whither goest thou? And whose are these before thee? Then shalt thou say, they be thy servant Jacob's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau, and behold, also he is behind us. And so he sends these gifts, and he's going to follow behind the gifts. And so I want to notice here that he made the first move. He went home to his brother. And so kill him with kindness, overcome evil with good. Do good unto those that hate us. Do good unto those that have a bitter attitude towards us. But make the first move. So then what do we do if we've noticed that we have become bitter towards someone? Well, first, don't wait for them to make the first move. We can do the same thing. We can kill them with kindness. We can be kind to them. Or we can also look to Esau. You know, Esau is a good example of one that was bitter towards his brother but overcame it. Notice what he does in verses 1 through 4. It says in of chapter 33, and Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau came, and with him 400 men. And he divided the children unto Leah and unto Rachel and unto the two handmaids. And he put the handmaids and their children foremost, and Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph hindermost. And he passed over before them and bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near his brother. And Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And so Esau immediately receives his brother. Verses 9 through 11, Esau said, I have enough, my brother, keep that thou hast thyself. Talking about the gifts. And Jacob said, nay, I pray thee, if now I have found grace in thy sight, then receive my present at my hand. And therefore I have seen thy face as though I had seen the face of God, and thou wast pleased with me. Take, I pray thee, my blessing that is brought to thee, because God hath dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. And he urged him, and he took it. So he received the gifts. He received his brother. And so receive that person, that brother. Don't cast them away. Accept God's grace. Accept them. Be reconciled together. And so what do we do when we begin to feel bitterness creep into our lives? We need to remember the grace of God. Remember that those who hurt you or did something ill to you, they're also worthy of God's grace and mercy. Remember that you too likely have hurt or slighted someone else, but through God's grace you have been forgiven. Remember the sacrifice of Jesus, that gift of grace, Hebrews 12 verses 3 and 4. Think about your sin for a moment from God's perspective. If there is any being at all who has a right to be bitter, it is God. You know, he has given us everything, even his only begotten son, John 3:16. But what did we do? We spit on him. We persecuted him. We nailed him to a cross. But what did God do? He sent his son anyway, knowing what we would do to him. Notice Romans chapter 5, verses 6 through 10. It says, for when we were yet without strength in due time, Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely for a righteous man will one die, yet peradventure for a good man some would even dare to die. But God commendeth his love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Much more then, being now justified by his blood, we shall be saved from wrath through him. For if when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of his Son, much more being reconciled, we shall be saved by his life. Knowing what we would do to his Son, he sent him anyway. You know, what marvelous great, what grace, what a gesture of reconciliation. And so don't let bitterness destroy you. Don't let it make you lose sight of God's grace and defile you. Don't throw away your birthright. You know, if you're holding bitterness in your heart, kill it with kindness. Be kind to one another. Love each other. Ephesians 4:31 and 32 says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you.